Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
And then there were four, but there are no Duke or Kentucky. The Final Four is set Saturday night in Minneapolis. It'll be Texas Tech going up against Michigan State, Virginia taking on Auburn. But yesterday, heck, Saturday, heck, the whole regional sites of what we've had over the last 4 days providing magnificent basketball that culminates into a Final Four that doesn't have any of those two blue bloods.
Remember a week ago when everyone was like, oh, this is the worst tournament ever. I just invoked my Arnie Spanier voice there, by the way. Worst tournament ever. Oh, my God, there were no upsets. This is so boring. Yeah, I think you got are you still bored, America? Are you still bored?
The drama that we had not only Saturday, but then that carried over into Sunday. You had two games that end up going into overtime, one game knocking off a top seed, and then you have one that goes down to the wire to wrap it all up with the top seed Duke of the East region getting knocked off by number two Michigan State, 68-67. And if people... if there's a group of people out there that are having more fun than the Duke and Kentucky haters, I have no idea who they are, because I will say this. There are many, many college basketball fans that love to watch the loathing of those two programs, and specifically John Calipari and one Coach Mike Krzyzewski.
Well, I also think it's the fans of each respective fan base getting mad at each other now. This is what the internet's great for, right? Like, we always talk about all the negative things that happen on social media, and there are plenty. But watching one fan base just go after each other as they both loathe in their own misery is also kind of entertaining, because I think Kentucky fans got kind of a sick little thrusing. I think Kentucky fans are sitting here saying, why does my coach always get criticized when Coach K gets a pass when he has three of the top five picks? And then on the inverse side, Duke fans are like, why are you worried about us? Worry about your own team. But it still makes for great entertainment.
I've heard a lot of criticism of Mike Krzyzewski over these last 24 hours. And I've got to be honest, I'm scratching my head trying to figure out why some of this is legit. Isn't this the nature of the tournament? Isn't this what provides such drama? Is we use one and done in a term of players entering college and then leaving for the NBA, but one loss and you're done in the NCAA tournament is what makes it so great. And I hear a lot of stuff, and yesterday was on the air during the entirety of the Duke-Michigan State game, and you've got Michigan State making runs, you've got Duke making runs, you have Duke turning the ball over quite a bit. But all of this, in my mind, Aaron, comes down to the fact of I hear these themes, these narratives of Coach K got out-coached. Coach K couldn't do it with the three of the top 10 players in all of college basketball in the freshman class entering. And I look at that as, that's not a criticism for what happened yesterday during those 40 minutes of game time between Michigan State. And are we really going to take a coach and put him over the coals after his team has lost by 1 point when, sure, one of those players misses a free throw that would have tied the game at least? I mean, it's not like Duke was run out of the gym by Michigan State. If they played again tomorrow, Duke would have a pretty good chance of winning that game. If they played seven times, you could see a 4-3 split. But it's the nature of the tournament. And so when it doesn't fulfill the desires of those fan bases out there, we sit there and we say, oh, Coach K got outcoached. Coach K can't do this. I think he's getting a bad rap today, considering what transpired yesterday.
Well, and I think a lot of it comes from the narrative after Kentucky lost. I think these two programs, whether their fans want to admit it or not, are intertwined. And the immediate reaction when Calipari loses a tournament game is, oh, there he goes again. Another loss in the tournament. One of the two or three best teams in the country. And so, look, I think in the broader spectrum of, like, it's really hard to win national championships, right? Like don't let Jay Wright doing it twice in 3 years fool you. Like, Jim Boeheim has won national championship. Tom Izzo has won. Coach Calipari has won. Bill Self has won. It's really hard to do. But I think that the thing is that Coach Calipari, John Calipari, was criticized as soon as that game went final. And so I think a lot of people in the media were quick and were ready to pull the trigger on Calipari. Like, look at this guy, another loss with one of the best teams in the country. And I think Kentucky fans, and I think other people in the media kind of sat there and said the same thing. Is like, this is really hard. But if you're going to criticize John Calipari, you better also criticize Coach K, who has three of the top five picks in the upcoming NBA.
Well, this is where I think that there's a difference. And I think that you would agree with me on this, is Duke and Kentucky weren't the same this year. Like, the Kentucky that we think exists as a general sports fan base, those that maybe don't follow it until March Madness, we still think of Kentucky as the one-and-done school. That's not the case anymore. And so the arguments that we would use against Calipari early on in the one-and-done era, if you will, going back to 2010, 2011, 2012, and those seasons, and even 2011, they made the Final Four, and they had Brandon Knight was, I think, the only one-and-done that they had there. But the point being is there was a narrative around Cal that they weren't getting it done with the one and dones, and they only had the one national championship. Like, I don't look at Kentucky anymore as that one and done program. But I guess what you're saying is that if you're going to criticize Cal for that, even if it's true or not right now, you sure as heck better criticize Coach K.
Yeah, and I think to your point, and I think this is something a lot of people miss when they just kind of casually lump in John Calipari. He doesn't have the players that he used to. Like, and he still has really good players. There's probably 5-6 guys on this roster that play in the NBA. But you look at the guys that he had back in the day. I mean, John Wall, number one overall pick. Derrick Rose, number one overall pick. Anthony Davis, number one overall pick. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, number two overall pick. Karl-Anthony Towns, on and on and on and on and on. You look at this roster, they might not have a top 10 pick for what I believe, and I could be mistaken on this, I believe it would be the first time in the Calipari era that he would not have a top 10 pick. And so, yeah, that was kind of my only broader point, and where I think the fan bases get mad at each other is Kentucky fans are sitting here and saying, you know, you want to criticize our coach, fine. We think that we should be in the Final Four just like you do. But that other guy over there has a lot of talent, and a lot of people are giving him a pass.
I just look at Duke, and to take it from the Coach K angle of, Coach K wasn't outcoached yesterday by Tom Izzo. Michigan State's a very good basketball team. Maybe Coach K didn't recruit as well as we thought he did. It sure may sound for the fact of this, and it may sound ridiculous when you think of that he bring in three of the top 10 guys in high school hoops and heading in and having the freshman class of this year. But there were holes on that Duke team. We talked so much about the lack of three-point shooting. And Duke has had a history of great three-point shooters, whether it be dating back to Trajan Langdon and J.J. Redick, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. John Shire was a guy that could shoot the ball. Kyle Singler. Like, there were guys who were threats from three that you had to guard, you had to defend, you had to worry about. In putting together this class and this specific team, that's where he missed out. And if there was ever a point, I think, if we're looking at maybe where Duke missed, it was maybe in that guard area. I know Zion Williamson had 5 turnovers and RJ Barrett had 7 yesterday. So, like, a lot of the heat comes on them. But I think it's maybe more of the guard player of bringing in those guys. I just can't get on a guy for putting his team in a position to go to the free throw line and have two opportunities to tie the game if you make, or have an opportunity to tie the game if you make both. It's just so easy to pile on in a one game situation. I don't know what Duke would have done differently, except maybe try to bring in a little bit more in the backcourt to maybe turn down or, you know, lessen the numbers. I just think it's an unfair criticism for Duke just because they didn't get it done with top talent.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could make that point, but I mean,
like, you think it's legit? You think, like, him not getting to a Final Four is, with this group, is a failure, and if you're at Duke, you're going for titles. Is that kind of what I'm...
No, I don't think it's quite that extreme, and I think the nature of a one-and-done tournament, as you alluded to, it's really hard to win these games. But I also think, like, you can make a legitimate case that Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett are the two best players in college basketball. And so I know it's not an apples-to-apples comparison with a professional sports situation where the Warriors, you got to beat them 4 out of 7 times. But it's like, you know, in a Game 7, if the Warriors are in a Game 7, they should win because they have Steph and Kevin Durant as opposed to whoever they're playing, right? So to me, I don't like. I think Coach K even said it well. He said, "I'm disappointed. I don't think this season itself is a disappointment." But I mean, come on. If I just feel like a lot of other guys would be taking a lot more heat. I mean, Zion Williamson is once in a lifetime, at least the college level. We'll figure out if he's going to be once in a lifetime at the NBA level. I've seen people argue that he's the best player that Coach K ever coached at Duke. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far. Grant Hill, four-year guy, whatever, Christian Laettner, whatever. Zion was really good, and I think the frustration is not only did they lose in the Elite Eight, they didn't look very good in the second round. They frankly didn't look very good in the first round, but they didn't look good in the second round or the Sweet 16 either.
Something was missing, and you thought that when he came back from his knee injury that was the end. Heck, they win the ACC tournament, they end up getting the number one overall seed. But there may still have been...
They weren't the same team.
Yeah, it was just something that just wasn't right. And that injury is to deal with. I mean, Cam Reddish wasn't at 100% even earlier on in the season when Trey Jones was dinged up. You saw when one of those pieces were out, when they weren't at 100%, they weren't the same team. All I know is this. You go to any park here in Los Angeles or around the country, and you're running pickup games, or any kid who's playing high school basketball, and you run an open gym, and you get a couple of the old guys that come in that maybe played high school hoops about 20 years ago, the young guns aren't sitting on the court for 2 hours holding court with winner stays. Like, there are games where the other team's going to get you. And Duke got last night. And I know that they had a couple of other opportunities to get got, but they were still there in the end. And I know the Final Four is the goal and a national championship is the goal. I think it's so easy to sit there and say, Coach K got out coached. Well, tell me how.
Yeah, I don't know that he got out coached, but I think you can say that it's a legitimately disappointing season for Duke. And by the way, this is one of the great things about the NCAA tournament is you have a team like Michigan State, a player like Cassius Winston, who I'm a guy you know, and I think you watch more college basketball than you give yourself credit for, because you drop little nuggets that I think you're a secret, a closet college basketball guy. So what I was going to say was Cassius Winston, I don't know if that guy will ever – this is the Michigan State point guard for people who didn't see the game yesterday, 20 points, 10 assists. I don't know if he will ever play an NBA game, but at the college level, he is so awesome, and he completely controlled that game. And so I'm with you in the sense that I don't know if Coach K got out coached. I think he ran into another really good team that just doesn't have the star power that his team did. But I also think – I don't know. Like, I don't think if you're – like, you have the best team in the country, and I'm not saying the best team wins every year because there's a lot of years that they don't. But to not even be one of the Final Four, I get the frustration of fans that are sitting there saying, like, come on, Coach K. I mean, Zion, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish. I mean, these are guys that we're gonna be looking up at this team in 10 years and be like, wait, was Cam Reddish on? He was on the same team as Zion? that guy that's averaging like 21 this year for the Wizards or whoever he's gonna play for, like. I just think it was a, I'll say this, maybe not a disappointment, a lost opportunity.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The one-and-done players, not only have they been under the microscope because it could be gone in a couple of years, but they're also gone from the NCAA tournament. Duke was really the, I guess, last chance, if you would, to have a host of one-and-done players make it to the Final Four, but it didn't happen this year, and now it has us all up in arms about the one-and-done and how college teams shouldn't go by that recipe, shouldn't go by that method, because look how far it gets you. Is the one-and-done done in college basketball?
Well, it might literally be done in a year or two here, but figuratively, it just hasn't resulted in success for these programs. And we opened the show by talking about, is it fair to be critical of Coach K? And there's only going to be one team that wins the championship, but he also has, you could legitimately argue, three of the top 10 players in the sport and two of maybe the top two or three players in the sport. But time and time again, we find out, and it's funny, Dave, because you and I filled in on Friday, and you brought up this point of, if you go down the checklist of successful college basketball programs in the tournament, Duke had almost none of those variables. Didn't shoot the three ball well, didn't shoot foul shots well, didn't have veteran guards, and so maybe it's a little bit of an anomaly to lose this quote-unquote early with this much talent. But yeah, you look at Duke's recent success, you look at Kentucky's recent success, that hasn't been there.
I look at this Duke team, and that's why it's just so, it's so difficult for me to be critical of Mike Krzyzewski in this scenario. I think that there are areas that he should be open to criticism for things that have happened. In fact, now that he's kind of taken over the one and done, I found it interesting that he made comments at the regional this week on how the NCAA has got to figure out, while the NBA may have their one and done plan ready to go and their CBA and how they're going to handle it in it, in doing away with it, that college basketball in the NCAA hasn't been proactive. And I thought to myself, you're really the only one that's doing it right now. I mean, like there aren't other teams, other programs that are bringing in three players at a time like he's been able to do on a couple of occasions. And we mentioned him taking over that torch kind of from Kentucky, where it's like, hey, if you can't beat him, join him. I give Coach K credit for realizing, you know what? Not only are those players coming to Duke, it means those players aren't going to Kentucky, which gives us another chance to win. So he changes his philosophy. 20 years ago, it was blasphemous for any player to leave school after his freshman year when they go to Duke. When Elton Brand did it, everybody was like, what? Wait, what's going on here? This is because it hadn't happened. We talked about the Grant Hills and the Christian Leitners and the Bobby Hurleys, guys who had stayed and throughout those seasons and played their full careers in college basketball. So like Duke has changed, but when I see the one and done scenario that we've got in college basketball and how it may be going away, it's brought up so many more questions of, all right, look at Virginia's veteran backcourt, or veteran team, I should say. Look at what,
Michigan State.
Yeah, Michigan State has done with, you know, and at times you've got 22-year-old men playing against 18-year-old boys, and I think that's a difference as well when you're playing. The one and done to me, and we're going to play a bit from Rob Dowster in a bit, that is maybe changed and maybe hasn't put the attention on, is the development of players. Because maybe you aren't as invested, or because your time frame is so crunched with that unit, you're not able to develop.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, Coach K has even talked about himself, you know, just having to speed up the process. By the way, this is why I don't criticize either Coach K or John Calipari, because John Calipari's made it to the Elite Eight 7 out of 10 years at Kentucky. Like, to have your team in the conversation every year when you literally have a completely different team is unbelievable. And so when I look at this scenario, as far as you know what you just said, speeding up the process, it's absolutely correct. It's why Coach K last year had to go to a zone when he had Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter and all those guys, because he said, like, you guys aren't playing man-to-man well enough at the highest level, and I have no choice but to switch up what I've been doing. So it's interesting, and I think the lack of one-and-done guys in the Final Four with the great high school players that are now college freshmen, I think is reflective on, one, that the programs that recruit these guys are the programs that don't recruit these guys, I should say, are having better success developing guys over 2 or 3 years. But again, to your point, it's tough to develop these guys in a short amount of time if you are Duke or Kentucky, and then furthermore to find the right pieces to fit around them.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. You can see him today on Fox Sports 1, Speak for Yourself, doing all of that and so much more. Now that the Final Four is set, Doug, so much conversation about what happened last night in Washington, D.C. with Duke falling to Michigan State, and a lot of the blame on Coach K's shoulders. How much of the blame it should be on Mike Krzyzewski?
What did he specifically do wrong?
Well, yeah, that was my question as well. We hear outcoached. We heard maybe didn't have a team around him. Maybe didn't develop players. Is any of that fair for Mike Krzyzewski?
Totally, that part is fair. I mean, look, and I probably should have gotten into this more when I hosted the Herd, but my show obviously is built a little different. The issue with recruiting one and dones or being at Duke now is that it's really hard to establish a bench and get guys to buy in. I mean, Marcus Bolden was a McDonald's All-American, and obviously he's still there, and he's improved. They just don't have any other guards that they can. They don't have a Quinn Cook like they had last time they won a national championship, who's a veteran who can make shots. And so your options are kind of limited. Like, you know, Cam Reddish whether it was his knee or whether it was chest cavity or just confidence. Like, he's run hot and cold all year long. But, you know, they're just limited in terms of the places they can get scoring from. Trey Jones shot the ball very, very well at point guard in the Sweet 16, but throughout the life of the year, he's been a poor shooter. And, you know, at some point, it becomes about getting the ball to R.J. Barrett, get the ball to Zion Williamson, and hoping they make the right read and the right play. And I thought they did a pretty good job considering. And Michigan State's got grown-ups. They got grown men. And they're really well coached. I would say if I was going to be critical of Coach K, it'd be twofold. One is that I haven't felt like for a couple years they developed much of an offensive repertoire. They spend half the year trying to figure out what's what, and then they're very, very basic and simple. And the stuff they run, because it changes year to year, it's not the greatest in the world. It's not the greatest spacing. As opposed to putting the players in an offense, spacing them out, having them move the ball, and, you know, making sure, even though they can take guys against weaker teams, you know, make them execute so that when you need an offense, when you need spacing and creativity, you have it. The second thing would be, you know, look, they're a team that scores off of their defense. And Michigan State only turned the ball over 7 times. And yet they never really changed their defensive attack. You know, part of it is you have to score, make your second free throw to press. But Michigan State has one ball handler, Cassius Winston. They never once just ran at him and double-teamed and got the ball out of his hands late in the shot clock. Why not? Why not try it? Especially when you're playing a small lineup that's really athletic. So I felt like they just kind of lined up and tried to play Michigan State and play a little bit in their hands in that fashion. And because they hadn't developed an offense, you're not able to get 2 points here, 2 points there, get enough until, you know, it's R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson time. Instead, the entire time you're depending upon runouts and great plays, you know, to keep you scoring.
Doug, you've been all over this UCLA opening here now for 3-plus months. Seth Davis reported today that UCLA reportedly offered 6 years, $48 million to John Calipari, which he turned down. What do you make of that offer, Doug? And then two, do you believe that UCLA really has that much in the coffers? Are they willing to go that high? And if so, how does that change the landscape of who they might be able to get?
Well, this is like the worst of all scenarios for UCLA, I think, that probably Calipari's people put it out there. First, that's less than he makes now.
Yep.
So, I mean, it would be classic UCLA to go like, hey, you want to leave Kentucky for UCLA? Here's an offer of less money.
Sure.
Which John Calipari says, okay, I'll just get a better contract where I am. I mean, UCLA has historically underpaid guys, very arrogant. Now, that's not an arrogant, like, you know, $48 million a year is not an arrogant, but considering it's public knowledge what John Calipari makes. It's a very UCLA offer. On the other hand, when this happened to DePaul last time they had a job opening, when they hired Dave Leto, once you put out a number that we got $8 million, now none of these other agents for all these other big-time coaches are like, hey, if Calipari's worth $8, then we're worth $8. Do I think they have the money? I know they do. You know, the Wasserman, you know, Wasserman clearly wants to make this thing happen. I don't know how they if they come up to $8 million for anybody else. You know, if you call Bill Self, he might be able to get him, because I'm not sure it's not time for a restart there. I don't know if Tony Bennett takes it. I mean, you know, does whoever loses in the national semifinals gets a call? But I mean, really, Aaron, you know as much as I do, they've done a great job of keeping this quiet.
Yep.
The only thing I had heard was they want to make a huge offer to John Calipari, and they wanted, you know, I was told it was like $20 million up front, you know, to get him to make the move. So maybe that's how they did it, $20 million up front, and then the rest is paid out over the life of the 6 years, the last 5 years. But, and then, you know, I've heard names like Mick Cronin and, you know, Tony Bennett and all those other names with dream candidates, which, it feels like they're waiting for people to lose before they make the offer.
This is such a weird reset, but Doug Gottlieb joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Byer sitting in for Doug, who's talking college hoops with us. One more on UCLA. Would the style work of Tony Bennett? Because when Ben Howland was going to Final Fours, I know they weren't winning titles, but, you know, there was questions about the style, and maybe it wasn't about just getting to Final Fours. It was about bringing home a national championship. But does a style have to play at UCLA?
I guess. I mean, That's what people say, right? But I've noticed that in Virginia, they kind of like the style of – my favorite style is the one that has more points than the other team at the end of the game.
Sure.
That is a really, really good style. So, you know, I mean, look, Ben Howland, they started losing. He lost L.A. AU, all the AU coaches kind of turned on him. You know, the Drew Holiday thing didn't work out for him. And by the time he won the Pac-10 his last year as coach at UCLA, the die was already cast. And he had to do so with kids from out of the area. Aaron, obviously, you know, you brought in Kyle Anderson from New Jersey, and you Tony Parker from Atlanta, and who else? Who was the other wing from the South that they got?
Jordan Adams, right?
Yeah, they got Jordan Adams as well. I mean, he couldn't recruit L.A. anymore, Dan. That's why he lost his job, not because of style of play. And you know. Actually, Holland's last year at UCLA, they led the Pac-12 in scoring. That's the great part about it. But, I think so. That's some of it. But, you know, look, if you want style of play, you want to win, you want somebody to recruit, like, why don't they offer Bruce Pearl the job? I don't, you know. Like, all right, he's had NCAA stuff. Like, okay. And John Calipari hasn't. But Tony Bennett's beyond reproach. He's done an amazing job. He's a great coach. He's about the right things. I wonder if a guy would leave Charlottesville. And if you can get to a Final Four in Charlottesville and maybe win a national championship in Charlottesville, why do you have to leave?
So this Final Four is obviously set. Just your first impressions. I mean, we got these four teams, kind of four unique stories all in and of itself. What do you think?
Well, I would say defense wins. I mean, they're all incredible defensive teams. I think that people, if you take a breath, and you don't look at the numbers for what these coaches make, you start to realize why the coaches are so valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Like Bruce Pearl, literally everywhere he's been, he's won. Tony Bennett's been at Washington State where nobody won, and he got to the Sweet 16. Tom Izzo, I mean, it's unbelievable what they've done. And then, you know, Chris Beard won 30 games at Arkansas Little Rock in his lone year there, and it took him 2 years to get Texas Tech going. He loses four starters, and they're better. So I'd say defense, coaching, and then I've been around actually all four of these teams this year, and all four of the teams, when you go to their practices, it's just different than everybody else. There's just a, you know, the working expression is just connected. You know, it's a little bit like relationships, you know, that some relationships people are connected, some relationships they're not. And in college basketball, some teams you walk in and there's just a focus and a vibe and a connection between the kids and the coaches. And sometimes there's not. And all four of these, if you've ever been, Aaron, I don't know how much time you spend around them, but I've been around all four and all four of their locker rooms and practices. And they're all like, man, there's something different about that group than everybody else.
I was just going to say, yeah, no, being around Texas Tech this past week in Anaheim, it was, you know, something that I've tried to harp on my Saturday show is like Texas Tech making the Final Four is like, I don't know, Oregon State in the college football playoff or Vandy in the college football playoff. But you spend time around that team specifically, and that's the only one I could speak for this specific season, but it was like a team that really believed they belonged on this stage. I was just so impressed by being around them.
Oh, he's unbelievable. I mean, he's just such an – and I did this a little on Twitter and on the Herd, where basically – I mean, there's a lot of similarities to his mentors, Bob Knight. And obviously, I think the common fan thinks of Bob Knight, the screamer, the yeller, or the weird kind of TV personality at the end of his career. But he's an amazing coach. And the defensive concepts, the, you know, basketball is four times as mental. Something that you want to accomplish is four times more mental than it is physical. That's why they 4-1 is their kind of team expression, if you will. And even the motion offense they run, which is kind of unscoutable. I mean, there is nothing more miserable than guarding motion when you're a basketball player. And there's a 30-second shot clock. Like, I remember my first 2-3 weeks of practice at Notre Dame. Like, you know, when you get to college, you think I was really well coached by my dad and my high school coach, who's like a successful junior college coach now. And I thought I'd been through hard practices. And then you're like guarding a motion offense for 2 hours in practice, and you're like, wow, I either really, really suck or this is really hard, because you don't know where the screens are coming from. You don't know where the reads are, because you're just kind of following them around and guessing, and they're reading you and they're making you guess wrong. So I think there's a little bit of that in Texas Tech. Look, if you want to actually dive even deeper, which is very interesting, I mean, Virginia doesn't run their old motion blocker mover offense. Michigan State's changed much of their offense this year. And Auburn plays kind of a unique style, but they've evolved and changed some. Like, not only are all these guys good and all these teams are connected, but all the coaches have tried to adapt their personnel to what they're doing.
Doug Gottlieb joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Before we let you go, Doug, does Texas Southern have enough defense to stop UWGB tomorrow night in the CIT? That's our April Fool's joke. That's all it is, our April Fool's joke. We had some fun with Rob Dowster and the CBI earlier. You got the CIT question. I don't know if they do.
Thank you. I appreciate it greatly.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The Lakers are shutting down LeBron James after his first season in Los Angeles, putting an end to the first year of his four-year contract. And as I sit there and I see what's happening with the Los Angeles Lakers, and big picture-wise, if you're a Lakers fan, you shouldn't be outraged. And in fact, you should be more in tune with what reality is. This is a team that was never going to compete for an NBA title this season. Not with Golden State, not with Houston being at the place they are, not with the rest of the West even playing to their capabilities. This was a team that was not going to win an NBA title. Just wasn't going to happen. And now, with LeBron James being in LA, with everything that has happened, it is best for LeBron James to not only miss these next six games, but it's probably best in the Lakers' long-term future, in my mind, Aaron, that LeBron James doesn't play another seven-game series in the playoffs, right? Had another 14 games during a playoff run where they wouldn't win a title anyway. In my mind, it is almost a blessing in disguise for Laker fans that LeBron James is sitting out and missing the playoffs.
I vehemently disagree. I think we can all sit here and say, look, at the beginning of the season, realistic expectations weren't a championship. But I also think that, look, you and I both live in L.A., and the Lakers, coming into this season, hadn't been to the playoffs in five straight years. And they've been through the rebuild. They went through the Kobe retirement, then they've gone through the rebuild, they've gotten excited for the young players, and this was supposed to be the year, while they were not going to compete for a championship, that they were going to break through, right? They were going to get into the playoffs, they were going to get those young guys reps, they were going to figure out who's worthy of staying, who's worthy of going, who's going to be the number two guy behind LeBron. And I feel like we're right back where we started on opening day, only I think we're in a worse position because LeBron got hurt this season. He missed time. He clearly doesn't like the guys that he's playing with. He doesn't like his coach, by the way, either. And so I just sit here and say it's beyond year one being a waste. I think it was a step in the wrong direction because there are so many questions going into the offseason. Are you going to be able to get another free agent? Are you going to be able to trade for Anthony Davis? Who's going to be the coach? Who's actually going to be here? I just think it was a disaster of a year one, and I don't think Lakers fans should sit back and say, well, he's not playing in the playoffs, so it's good in the long run.
Well, the Lakers, though, they don't play to play in playoff series. They play to win titles. And in the LeBron scenario, whether Paul George was going to come to L.A. or not come to L.A., the point is he makes up his mind to go to Oklahoma City and not join the Lakers. It was one of the first decisions we had of free agency. So when LeBron goes and joins the Lakers and makes the announcement in the press release that he has signed a four-year deal and was asked in the training camp about what he was going to do and if he was going to make a commitment to L.A., he even joked and saying, well, I did sign a four-year deal. I don't think when people saw LeBron sign a four-year deal, they thought he was going to bring in four championships. I'm not even sure if LeBron wants to win one championship, but I can tell you this, if he does win one championship, it sure as heck wasn't going to happen this year. So if you're talking big picture and if you're worried about the workload that LeBron has on his shoulders and what has happened right now with the Lakers, it's best for him not to play these six games. It's best for them to not get ousted in the Western Conference semifinals because all of those games would just add more tread to the tires of LeBron that you've got to maximize when he's got those 3 years left on his deal.
But it would have added tread to the tires of Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart and Lonzo Ball, hypothetically. you can't win a championship with one player. And you look at when he went to Miami, it was the second year that they won the championship, but they had been to the finals the year before. When he was with Cleveland, they won the championship in year two, but he went to the finals the year before. Like, LeBron can't do it himself. And yeah, you need other guys around him, but you need guys that have playoff reps. Even if they trade for Anthony Davis, by the way, what's he played in? Three playoff series his entire career? He's won one playoff series. And so to me, yes, it's about preserving LeBron, but guess what? He had a month off in the middle of the season. And so now you're talking about next year. We have to hope that they, one, get another guy, that two,
which isn't out of the question. For as much as you people want to say, oh, it's not going to happen, there's still, if you had to pick any team for Anthony Davis to go to in 2020 when he becomes a free agent or possibly gets dealt this offseason, what's the most likely team?
It is the Lakers. But again, to expect them in year one to make this monumental leap, year one of the Anthony Davis, LeBron era or whatever, to expect them to make this monumental leap from not even in the playoffs, where half the roster, as it's currently constructed, and who knows who's going to be here and who's not, has never played in a playoff game, to now, you're magically going to win the championship next year, or is it probably going to take another year? So now you're talking about year three of LeBron. So this year was a waste, in my opinion. Next year, okay, you get the second guy, you make a little run in the playoffs, but you don't win a title. Now you're asking year three when LeBron, that'll be the 2021-2022 season. LeBron's going to be 36 in the middle of that year. Like, I just think at a certain point, like, it's wonderful that this is a four-year contract, but LeBron's also in his mid-30s right now. He doesn't have that second piece. The younger guys didn't improve. I just don't know where this team is after 1 year.
What would have been the perfect scenario then? And listen, there's two different things that we're saying here. I'm sitting here looking at the Lakers and their decision to shut him down. In the end, I think it's better for the Lakers. And that's my point. I'm not saying what happened with New Orleans and the trade situation that fell through because of the pressure they put on the Pelicans. I'm not saying all that was good, and I'm not saying that this season was a success. But if you really look back and you're a Lakers fan, Lakers fans don't care about playoff berths. They want championships. And the way to get a championship with LeBron James is to make sure that when you've got the pieces, that everything is in order. And that's where I think when you look at what has happened with LeBron, sure, things could have gone a lot better, but I just don't know how much things have necessarily changed in a season where the championship wasn't the expectation.
I think it's so funny, right? Because we have this deal in sports, and it's kind of like the Duke conversation that we've had all day. If I had told you the beginning of the year, before the first game, Duke has four freshmen, like, what's a realistic expectation? Well, you know, they'll get to the tournament. They'll be good. They got four freshmen that are all Americans, but, you know, they get the Sweet 16, whatever, blah, blah. But then the season plays out and you're like, okay, well, this is completely different. And the end result with Duke was about what we expected in the preseason, which was, yeah, they're a good team. They'll make a little run in the tournament, but they're not really a national championship contender. Well, I think it's the same thing with the Lakers. I think it's easy to sit here today and say on whatever it is, April 1st, like, well, you know, we knew they weren't going to win the championship anyway, so it all worked out fine. It's like, no, it didn't work out fine.
That's not what I'm saying at all. I never said it worked out fine, but I'm saying as you look back at the scenario of what is happening, you could have tried to put all your chips in, and all of a sudden now you've worn down
LeBron.
They
did try to put all their chips in.
Not for the playing of LeBron. You just said that even if Anthony Davis came over in midseason, you weren't sure of what was going to happen. Well, Luke's going to be gone. You're not sure about Lonzo ended up not being healthy. The pieces that you'll have in the future, whether it be a new coach and whether it be a healthy Lonzo or whoever comes in, are going to be better than what you had in this past season. And
why?
There's no point in resting or
we're
no
guessing.
Point in playing
we're
LeBron right now during this time when it's meaningless. And if you step back, it's just they weren't going to beat the Warriors. Even if everything went right for them this season, they weren't going to beat the Warriors anyway. So would you rather cash in LeBron in year one of the four-year deal? Or would you rather make sure that things are better, just like Boston waited out LeBron? That was the whole thing in the East. Let's wait for the Celtics to make their move. Let's wait till he leaves, and then we're going to capture the East Eastern Conference. Well, maybe the Lakers are saying, hey, all right, we'll wait till this Kevin Durant ends up going to the Knicks and the Warriors kind of fall apart and Klay Thompson's got a decision.
If that really was the plan, why did they try to trade half their team for Anthony Davis?
Because he became available at that time.
He didn't become available. He demanded a trade with only one team in mind that he
could have been gettable.
I just think it's so preposterous to sit here and say that year one was not a complete waste because we're going to have to start over next year with a new coach. Two, if you really go back to, say, the day after last season ended when we kind of knew that LeBron was coming, but we didn't. We thought there was going to be a second guy here with him, first of all, probably Paul George. That never happened. And so I don't know how much further along we are other than that LeBron is now a year older.
Do you think with less games that could have been played? And that's part of the argument. Do you think that this drama of the AD trade, if all of these pieces are here on the court with the players next year, do you think that carries over into next year?
I think eventually guys get over it, but I also think, again, I think it's stunted their growth as players. I think it's stunted the growth of a team. And now next year, again, LeBron's going to be a year older now with some injury history on him. Those guys really didn't develop. I mean, Kuzma's a little bit better, whatever. They're going to have a new coach and a new system. So I just feel like, yes, it's okay to say year one, I don't think anybody would call it a quote-unquote throwaway, but I think year one was, okay, we're not going to win a championship, but you wanted to see steps so that in year two it could get done. I think to your point, there's no reason to think that those steps can't happen between now and opening night next year. My point is we have no proof, no data to prove that those steps will be taken.
Well, I would rather make sure that I've got a guy with not as much on his wheels, if you will. I keep on using the tread on the tires reference, but I would rather be in that situation than wear down LeBron another year of him playing 9 straight months of competitive basketball.
Yeah, I mean, look, if the question is should he be playing and the Lakers have been already eliminated, of course not. But I guess to my point is, I don't know. I just think it's been such a disaster. It's been so disappointing. And now you could sit here and say, yeah, let's rest him up for next year. But it's also like, well, what was the point of this year?
If you're taking the Sacramento Kings, for an example, of a younger team that hasn't had the culture of winning, and I'm not using them in the Lakers of being a drought because the Kings and Lakers are two completely different franchises. I can understand the Sacramento Kings and wanting those guys to get a taste of, all right, let's try to make a push for the playoffs. They're going to fall short. They're not in the postseason. But the point being is I don't know how much you need that for the Lakers because you have LeBron and you've got other pieces, and who knows what other pieces are going to be there. Plus, Lonzo Ball would have been hurt anyway. Yeah, I mean, Brandon Ingram, a guy I know that you're not huge for being superstar in the NBA. I mean, how much can you necessarily count on him? Maybe there's a move made with that. I'm just saying, as you step back and you think of the season, it's like in the NFL. Would you rather be 8-8, miss the playoffs, or would you rather be 3-13? You know, that's why teams end up, if they're not going to make the NBA playoffs, they're like, we might as well tank, because otherwise we're going to get stuck at 9 or 10 in the lottery. If I'm the Lakers, and not that they're tanking for a better draft pick, but why make the ultimate push to try to, you know, to try to use up everything that you've got for a year where you're not going to get much out of that, you know, out of that orange that you're trying to squeeze for juice. That's the point of it.